Warning, the following podcast will contain subject matter that on the surface may appear tame and for everyone. We here at Orsini's Uncensored Mind can assure you that it will not be. You will hear adult language. We will have a complete disregard for your feelings and emotions, and we will have zero restraint on the opinions shared on this show. There will be no safe spaces available for anyone listening. So, if you're one of those individuals offended by literally everything, this is not the fucking show for you.
Hit it!
You got it, Tim.
Now shake those hips and let your backbone slip. Pull up your pants and do the Muscle Man dance. Just follow my voice. You don't really have a choice. And pull up your pants and do the Muscle Man dance. Now wiggle your behind.
Erase your mind.
Pull up your pants and do the Muscle Man dance.
I am Vartan Asnayan and I got swag.
Where are you from?
I'm from Hollywood, California, Yerevan.
And why'd you like lead cops on this chase?
Because I got swag, I wanted to make it look good.
Are you on drugs or alcohol?
No, sir.
You take drugs or alcohol?
What is drugs?
Welcome to Orsini's Uncensored Mind, and now your host, AJ Orsini.
How the hell is everybody out there? This is your boy, this is your main man, your soul brother from another mother. This is your host of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. This is AJ Orsini, and I am here yet again with another edition of the show that all of you can't seem to get out of your minds, and I don't blame you. I'm entertaining as fuck, so I'm extremely happy about the fact that you guys love the show so goddamn much. I am here to bequeath unto all of you. That's right, I am bequeathing yet again episode 92, and holy shit, I'd normally like to sit here and say that there's so much to get to, folks, and I've got my fair share. There are things to discuss, but holy moly, I made a huge mistake just as early as yesterday. I'm recording this on Wednesday, by the way, so Tuesday. I made a huge, huge fucking mistake yesterday. So, as most of you know who have been following the show, I haven't done or been to or been present for or whatever the fuck. I haven't been a part in any way, shape, or form, part of a wrestling show in quite a while, about a year, actually. Nah, more than a year. Not this past February, but the February before that. I have helped contribute to shows. I've been in contact with people. I'm not completely off the map, but I haven't physically participated in anything in a while. So when I tell WrestleMania, I think is the one thing that I've done. So when I tell you that one vague post created way too much commentary, that's what I did yesterday. I made quite a mistake. So I already attempted to fix it on social media, so I will now do so here on the show. So for those of you who are not following me on social media, and shame on you, you should. By the way, I'm on a creaky chair. For some reason, this motherfucker is just, it's like a haunted house chair. I don't know if you can hear it in the background. A little bit, right? Yeah, a little bit. Actually, with my strained voice, it sounds like I'm doing something I'm not supposed to be doing. Anyway, yes. So, what did I do again? Yes, yesterday. Start over again. So, I haven't done anything with a wrestling show, and yesterday I put up a status because, out of nowhere, seemingly, I am now a part or going to or being present for two wrestling shows coming up. One, July 14th, which I have advertised a little bit. I'm not working the show, which is what I'll get to in a second. But Game Changer Wrestling, GCW, is putting together a tribute show for the Notorious One himself, the Notorious 187 Homicide, who is a legend, an icon, literally throughout the whole area, is just basically considered the man around here in the New York City area. He's had his hands in building so many careers and being a part of so many people's lives up here, both the positive and the negative. For me personally, it's the positive. He was a very heavy influence in the beginning of my career. I think personally, if not for his seal of approval, I would not have gotten as many opportunities very early in my career had it not been for him. So I'm a huge fan of his, not just as a fan, but professionally as well. And personally, he's a cool dude. I've never had a problem or an ill word for Homicide in my entire life. So when I heard they were putting together a tribute show, I immediately thought to myself, well, I haven't done a wrestling show in forever, but if I'm going to go to one, I guess that would be it. So I did say publicly that I was definitely going to be going to that. Fast forward to yesterday, it now makes two shows, because this Friday, June 7th, Impact Wrestling, actually they're going to be here 2 days, June 6th, June 7th, but I will be in the house June 7th at the Melrose Ballroom in Queens, New York, not too far. I actually just found out yesterday it is one train ride away from me, an hour train ride, but a 1 hour train ride. I'm thinking about driving, but traffic, you know how that goes. So we'll see how that works as far as my mode of transportation. But I ended up deciding to go to this for the same reason I went to the tribute show. Impact's been here a few times. And like I said, I have a lot of friends who work the shows, not just in the ring, but behind the scenes. A lot of people that I know that I have not seen in physically forever, all working these shows, and they've been here a few times, and it just seems like every time Impact comes, I have a final, or I have something with my kid, or something. There's always something to prevent me from getting out of the house and going and showing my support. This time around, there's nothing. There's nothing happening. I actually have stuff going down the next day, but the night of Friday, I've got nothing going on, so I said, fuck it. I'm going to go. This is it. This is for real. I'm going to go. So now I've got two shows. So the mistake that I made was I said exactly this, but I said it more vague, I guess. I had mentioned that I haven't done or been a part of any show in over a year, and all of a sudden I'm going to be going to two of them. And I kind of left it at that, and I guess people misinterpreted that as saying that I'll be working those shows. So I said it on social media, and I'll say it here. I'm not working any of those shows. I'm going specifically to support friends and, you know, two birds with one stone. I'm going to see some old friends, and I'm going to see some wrestling. And I haven't seen wrestling physically live in a long time. And whatchamacallit, one of the biggest things I wanted to come out of all this and just proof that I'm not working the show. People should not anticipate me being a part of the show in any way. I mean, unless something drastic happens. I've been to shows where it's like, oh, I'm just here to watch, and then I end up getting asked to do something. I doubt that that's what's going to happen here. GCW has a really well put together company. I would know. I used to work there, and I have never worked with Impact directly. I've worked with them in partnership shows. I have worked with their talent. I've never actually directly under Anthem ever worked for them. But further evidence that I am not going to this show as an employee or as a worker or as talent, I bought tickets to these shows. And I wanted to make that point clear. I did it on social media a little bit. I'll expand upon it now. On both occasions, I spoke to my friends who work at Impact. I spoke to my friends who work at GCW. I know the promoter and the promoters who work with GCW, obviously, having been worked with them. I have relationships with basically every company, even WWE at some point. I somehow managed to get friendships and relationships with people that are there too. And I was told on both occasions, the GCW show and the Impact Wrestling show, I was told on two occasions not to worry about tickets. You're good. You're a buddy, you're a friend, you've always been good to me. You want to come to the show, bro, it's on me, come on to the show and we'll get you in the house. I thank all of them for their politeness and their kindness, and I said that also on social media and publicly, and I'll say it here publicly. Thank you. That made me feel extra good, no doubt about it. It's good to know that people didn't forget me. At least the people behind the scenes didn't forget me, right? But I politely told them no, and I immediately went to the ticket link, and I purchased two tickets, one for GCW, one for the Impact show. I will be going alone to both, but I won't be alone, I'm sure. There's a lot of people that I know who will be at GCW for sure, and a lot of people that I know that are going to Impact. So I won't be alone, but I wanted to bring up a point here about support. I purchased the tickets out of choice. I was not in the position where I had to. I purposely went out of my way to pull out my wallet and put out my credit card and purchase two tickets. And the reason for that is because I love pro wrestling. I support it. I support it fully. And I'm not saying this as a brag. I'm not saying that people who don't support it financially or are fake fans or whatever the case may be. Shit happens. I wasn't always in a position to just randomly go to my wallet, grab a credit card, and pay for wrestling tickets. That's more of a recent development, if anything. I'm 36. It's definitely happened throughout my 30s. This really didn't start happening until like my late 20s. So I know what it's like to want to go to wrestling shows, not have the funds for it. You know, shit happens in life. There are other things in your life you have to prioritize. I'm not trying to shit on anyone. I'm simply stating that if you're within the means to do so, then you should. And I would never sit here and tell people to do something that I wouldn't do. And I know it's a rare thing, and I know it's not found in a lot of places, but with Orsini, that's what you get. I would never tell someone, hey, you should support. Just like I told people about the $50 for Double or Nothing. I paid the $50 for Double or Nothing. Okay? I didn't pay it the day of because I was busy, but I paid. Just like I paid for GCW, I paid for Impact. Okay? I'm able to do it, so I did it. So I advocate for anybody out there who's financially stable enough to go ahead and do that. Truly do that. There's nothing that makes me more upset. And I have friends who do this, and I check them every time. I got friends who make more money than me who hit me up asking for streams. And back in the day, I used to have, you know, I'm a big internet guy. I'm big in computers. I know my way around a computer or two. And so, yeah, I know where all the stream sites are and all that shit. Okay, but I use the stream sites for shows that I can't physically get to. For instance, if I'm in the car during Raw and I want to keep track of what's going on, I'll pop a stream site on my phone or I'll pop a stream site on my laptop and listen to it in the car, something like that. You know, or a lot of these stream sites also have sporting events that are, you know, from around the world and things like that, so it's easy to catch. Do I watch pay-per-views on there? Admittingly, I used to, but I stopped. Once I became financially able to not have to do that, I stopped. And so that's what I'm advocating now. If you really do love the sport and you're financially able to support in any way, not just the WWE, but your local indie, Impact, Ring of Honor, MLW, whatever the case may be, whoever's in your local town, please go ahead and pay the money. It's the same thing with Powerbomb TV and New Japan World and all these different websites that are now streaming. Streaming is the new service. It's the new service. So if you have the financial ability, please go ahead and do that. So I definitely wanted to bring that up and bring up that point for people in supporting pro wrestling in all facets. So let's get into some of the other stuff. Actually, wait, before we get into the other stuff, I want to take the time to thank all you guys for supporting the show the way that you have. I know that I get into this a lot, but you guys really have no idea how important it is to me when you guys listen to the show and you support the way that you do. And even if it's small stuff like sharing the polls and or even taking part in the polls, sharing the episodes, sharing the flyers, just word of mouth stuff. There's a lot of you out there that are very consistent with it, and I want to take the time to thank all of you. I've got two more countries. I haven't posted it yet. I will later on today. Mexico and Italy. I had people downloading the episodes now in Mexico and Italy. That brings me up to like 22 or 23. I'm losing track as to all the countries that I've been dipping in to the show. I'm huge in Morocco right now. For those of you listening in Morocco, thank you. I don't know if it's the same person going through my list or different people getting episodes. This Poppy thing used to be a lot easier to figure out. They upgraded, they changed a bunch of shit, so I'm lost, but thank you guys for checking out the show and supporting it. If you're not able to do it through Podbean, because I noticed on the one thing that I can figure out seems to be all the different outlets that all the different streaming sites or different capabilities in order for you to get the show, not just Podbean, obviously. I'm on iHeart, Spotify, CastBox, iTunes, Google Play Music. I'm all over the place, wherever. I used to have that whole thing memorized, but I have so many. Anchor FM. I mean, I'm on a bunch of things. I'm on things I didn't even know I was on, just because there's sub-sites to the different streaming stuff that I just mentioned. So any way that you can catch the show, go ahead and do just that. I am going to be taking a few things into task, including myself, because last week I got into some topics and left a few things out because I was short on time and there was just something I needed to get off my chest. But this week we're going to dabble a little bit into some of that stuff, and we're going to get back into Dean Ambrose just a little bit, because Dean Ambrose has discussed a few things along the way that I feel we should really get into. By the way, if you're just listening, if you're just finding out, Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley, formerly of Dean Ambrose, has won the IWGP United States Championship over in New Japan. He did so at the Best of the Super Juniors tournament show over in New Japan. And he beat Juice Robinson, formerly CJ Parker of NXT. He defeated him for the IWGP US Championship. And it's right out of the gate. Now, I just find it funny because there's a lot of people complaining, wow, right out of the gate, they just gave him a belt. I mean, did they not do that for Styles when he left TNA? I'm not mistaken. Did he just debut and win? At least he won the U.S. title, right? Didn't AJ just walk right in and become IWGP Heavyweight Champion? Something to that degree? I'm not entirely sure off the top of my head, but this isn't the first time, which is my point, that they've reached and stretched and given a championship to somebody right out of the gate. So I don't know what the uproar is about this one. I'm sure it'll fade away as soon as Moxley does something with it. But there's newfound, quote-unquote, breath of fresh air deal with Dean Ambrose. I'm going to stop calling him Dean Ambrose. I'm just realizing now that I've just been trained to do that. Jon Moxley. This new breath of fresh air here. He did the podcast, of course, with Chris Jericho. He's done more interviews since. He's been very vocal. He did one with Wade Keller. Also not too long ago, where he revealed a little bit more on the subject. There is a meme going around indicating this line that apparently Moxley said that was even too hardcore for him, and was some Roman line involving the cancer deal, and a line he refused to say on the podcast. He said it was too effed up, and he had to draw a line, and he didn't say it on Raw either. He refuses to repeat it to certain people. There's a meme going around stating what that line is. The line is false, something about God killing Roman or something, some shit like that. It is false, but he has given a lot of information coming out. Chris Jericho has stated it is the most successful podcast episode he has ever done. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's getting involved with it. Me, normally, I wouldn't get into such things, but I will talk about this one because there is something about this podcast that I would like to point out that I think is as big a reason for its success as anything else. And I think the biggest reason for the success of that episode is John basically went out there and almost verbatim confirmed anything that anyone has ever been saying about the WWE creative process pretty much from the word go. There were a lot of stuff in that podcast you listen to and you're like, all right, maybe it's story time, maybe it's not, it's debatable. But the one thing that he seemed very passionate about, and which everyone seems to be so readily and easy to accept, is the idea that the creative process over in the WWE is just trash and garbage and needs to be completely remodeled and completely redone. And those are the words he used exactly. That it sucks and it needs to be completely, completely redone. And there's no debate about that. If this is how he feels, I'm not going to sit here and debate with Jon Moxley about that at all whatsoever. But I do believe that the success of this podcast is exactly that. The fact that here's a guy, former WWE champion, former Money in the Bank winner, former Shield member. I mean, this guy, for the most part, stayed on the top of every card he was ever on while he was in the WWE, comes out almost running, screaming from the WWE, telling the whole world exactly what they want to hear. That it was a horrific ending for his career. That it was painful physically painful. He's WebMDing depression. Like, he's just in a bad place. And this is becoming a common theme over and over. And I left Facebook open again, which is a big no-no when I'm on the air, because Facebook has too many fucking sound effects. Ruining my fucking mojo here. But anyhow, these people over and over and over, we're starting to see, and it doesn't really matter how high on the card, doesn't really matter how low on the card. You have jobbers that leave that complain. You have people in the mid card that leave that complain. You have apparently people in the main event who leave and complain. This idea that writers are walking around writing these scripts and even writing ideas. There were a couple of stories he told where the writer would pitch him something. Oh, it was the doctor, right? Here's the script. Here's what we're going to do. This doctor's going to inoculate you and all this stuff. And Moxley says, well, I hate all of that. And the writer responds with, yeah, I know. So what the fuck are we doing here then? Because everyone keeps saying, yeah, the creative process sucks. Moxley said the same thing. The creative process sucks. What process? It doesn't sound like there's a process. This sounds like a one-way street. One person says something, and everyone tries their best to make the one thing happen. I made a comment in angst, and I was kind of hyped when I said it, but it's becoming evidently more true every single day. That no matter who you are, no matter what you do, no matter how over you are, no matter how hard you work inside the ring or out, you are playing to the audience of one. This has been said a bunch of times by a bunch of people, and now we're hearing it from one of the top guys, a guy who probably still has Vince McMahon's number in his phone and who had access to his office at any time, who had the ability to yay and nay ideas and to go in there and give his absolute honest opinion on things. And he is saying to you, I'm only playing to the audience of one. The line that he used that stuck out to me huge in a big way is if I'm just here, what was he say? He said, why do I work here? If the only reason you need me here is to read these lines, hire an actor. They would deliver the lines better than he would. And there, in fact, lies your problem. This is why we keep having this issue between myself and wrestling fans and non-wrestling fans and sports entertainment fans. I have been saying it for forever. And the only reason why I have been saying it for so long is because the WWE has been saying it for so long. And people aren't understanding. Still not getting it. John eventually got it. That's why he left. He's not a sports entertainer, at least not in his mind. He's a professional wrestler. And he'd like to go out there and wrestle professionally. And that's one of the issues that wrestling fans, I think, still have a hard time understanding. And I think it gets confusing because the WWE continuously keeps hiring their favorite wrestlers. So they want to believe that this is a wrestling show, but it's not. It's not. WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. They have been saying it to their blue in the face. And I know it's hard. It's hard to stay focused on that point because they constantly tease you with the opportunity to be more than just an entertainment company. They give you things like NXT. They give you things like NXT UK, where you can go on the network and you can watch your favorite indie stars go into the ring and perform like indie wrestlers. Okay, NXT TakeOver 25 just took place. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on. But NXT TakeOver 25 just took place. In that main event, Hot dog, that main event. There is something about Johnny Falsey that absolutely rubs me all kinds of the wrong way. He is an amazing performer, an amazing storyteller, and they really have cut back a lot on some of his Johnny-isms. You know, we don't see that dumb dead look sell anymore. There's certain things that they've removed from Johnny. And he's just, and it's true to his skill level, he has just recuperated and he's evolved and he's adapted and he's interjected different things into his offense, into his arsenal that makes everything great. There's a lot about that match that I love and a lot that I hate. And the stuff that I hate all stems from this idea that it goes against the WWE formula. So while I hate it, I want it because at least it kicks back to something different. The WWE is paint by numbers. You heard Moxley say it himself. All right, the formula that works in the WWE is very hard to work around. Very hard to work around. And for the excuse that people used to have, well, this style is safer. It makes them last longer wrestling this way instead of just going balls out. Well, they're getting hurt doing the safe style too. So what the fuck is the point? Injuries right now are at an all-time high, I should say. So it ain't protecting anybody. So what's the other excuse? Well, it's TV matches. You know, the casual fan, they wrestle in a way that the TV audience can keep up with the action. That's another way that people like to spin it. But bullshit. It's still bullshit. Because when you watch NXT and you watch NXT UK, they're not doing anything that ridiculous, that fast-paced, that they're like little blurs that the audience can't keep up with. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. The indie stuff that I don't like is the no-selling. That's it. That's the only thing that fucking bothers me at all about any of this shit. If they'll do. I saw literally during this takeover, I saw Matt Riddle execute a GTS into a submission hold. It wasn't even an attempt at a finish. The GTS has been a finishing maneuver in the WWE for several years, over a decade. Over a decade, it's been a finishing maneuver. But much like the super kick and the DDT and all this other garbage, we're relegated now to it. Just it didn't even get a pop because it was part of a sequence. We're using shit like that as a part of a sequence. It's like everybody is just WWE Warzone right now. They're all their creative characters. It's like every version of the circle button is all finishing moves. You can do a lowdown. You can do a rock bottom. Those are just regular moves now. Yeah, I'm old school. So sometimes I like finishes to be protected. Sue me. But I still like the match and I love the pay-per-view. But what we're getting to here, we've strayed here, but the whole point of all of this is that creative process. It doesn't exist. It's one guy. It's one guy. And it's hard to remember that it's one guy, because the one guy, he likes to control the main stuff. If you don't have the network, which a lot of you claim you don't, but I call bullshit, because a lot of the people who will tell me they don't have the network are the same people going online praising NXT TakeOver. Well, how the fuck did you see TakeOver if you don't have the fucking network? What, did you stream it? How many NXT streams are out there? The creative process doesn't suck. The creative process is non-existent. There is no process. One guy who pitches and approves, that's not a fucking process. The team of people that he has around him, and I'm referring to Vince, the team of people that he has around him, they have one fucking job. Appease him. That's it. Appease him. As long as they can appease him, they have a job and they'll be fine. That's why their writers are, it's a revolving door of writers at this point, of either people being fired or quitting just out of pure frustration. Road Dogg went to NXT, and it looked like he got released from prison, for Christ's sake, and he's still with the company. He just changed offices, that's all. But even that was enough of a change for him to start feeling like a whole new man. So I think it's being taken out of context. I think the reason why this podcast episode was so great is because it said literally everything that everyone he wanted to hear. But I think it's out of context. He said it himself. The creative process sucks. There is no process. It's a dummy mission. It's a placebo. It gives the illusion of a process. It's a writing team. They have meetings. They go over all these different things. But it's bullshit. The guy who's leading the writing meeting already knows what he wants. He's just waiting for someone else to think of it so that he can go, yes, do that. Elsewise, he's just going to shit on it and turn it the fuck down. That's how that fucking works. So I'm glad Dean Ambrose is finally coming out. And a lot of people say, well, isn't it kind of, you know, against the rules to be spilling all this information from behind the scenes? That's long gone, guys. Long gone. Everyone now is getting their frustrations out, whether it be through social media or some other means. But the idea or the day of an employer getting away with bullshit because there's some unwritten rule that is supposed to stay in the locker room, those days are gone. It's happening on every level. Major league level, the WWE, Impact, Ring of Honor, even indies. You can't even go on social media and befriend promoters and wrestlers without seeing bullshit drama all over social media. It's gone. That that part of kayfabe, I will admit, is dead. You know, once it gets real, it gets fucking real. Okay. Speaking of real, getting real in here, we're starting to run into a wall here. I'm going to talk a little New Japan right now for just a second. Talk a little New Japan real quick. We already mentioned Dean. Dean, I'm going to do it again. John, I'm going to take a shot every since. I got to go to the kitchen and get some fucking bourbon over there. A shot for every time I get it wrong. John Moxley won the IWGP United States Championship. I mentioned that, but I also mentioned it was at the Best of the Super Juniors tournament, and I did not mention the tournament itself. So, for those of you wondering, there is a block system. They go through points, pins, falls, submissions, you know, losses, all that stuff and stuff. They have their own little algorithm of how that works out. It's not that complicated. I just didn't brush up on it. But the end result is we round up with a final of Will Ospreay coming out of the Block B and Shingo Takagaji coming out of Block A. And the winner by pinfall after 33 minutes, Will Ospreay. Now, Ospreay is a very, very controversial figure. This is the second time that he's won this tournament. He won this year, and he won back in 2016. He is a two-time winner and a three-time finalist. He won twice, and he lost in 2017 to Kushida, who ended up becoming the Best of the Super Juniors, who now is in NXT himself. But the reason why I bring this up is three Super Junior tournaments, and I don't think that's all the tournaments that he's been in. I just think those are the three biggest ones because those were the ones where he was in the finals. Will Ospreay is a very interesting character to me because he is entertaining as fuck. When I watch Will Ospreay perform, I think to myself, this guy is amazing. His timing, his technique, the way that he just finds himself in the best position. He doesn't sell often, but when he does, it's beautiful because he's little. So it's always overdramatic. It's always for, you know, he always tries. I see that he sells more for the bigger guys than he does for the smaller guys. You know, with the smaller guys, it's more of an acrobatic routine. With the bigger guys, he will go in there and bump around and play the role. And none more evident, the only match that I liked in the G1 from the Ring of Honor standpoint was the Jeff Cobb Will Ospreay matchup. Now, the reason why I say it's controversial is because of those said acrobatics. As much as I am entertained by Will Ospreay, and I am, he's an amazing performer. I love watching his stuff, to be honest with you. I don't consider it, you know, pro wrestling. It's not, to me, it's not pro wrestling. It just isn't. It isn't by my definition. Now, my definition does not need to be yours. Before you start killing me and talking all that garbage about the evolution of pro wrestling and blah, 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 blah. No. I don't believe that at all whatsoever. I don't believe it's an evolution of anything. I think it's a guy who is not exactly the biggest dog in the fight, but he's found his niche. He's able to go in there and perform and do a bunch of stuff that no one else can really do. Very handful of guys that can work up to his speed and caliber. He is amazing at what he does. I don't consider what he does wrestling. Now, he's got credentials. He's wrestled for the biggest companies in the world. Companies who do advocate pro wrestling, by the way. Not just regular, average, run-of-the-mill sports entertainment companies. He's competed in the ring with some of the best pro wrestlers in the world, and he's won, he's beaten him, and he's had some match. And this is the part that kills me. I have seen Will Ospreay get into a pro wrestling ring and perform pro wrestling the way that it should be performed, in my view. I've seen him do it. So I can't sit here and say, oh, he's just a flippy guy. That wouldn't be true. Will Ospreay can wrestle. He can wrestle. He can tell stories. He can sell what he wants. You know, he's not exactly the biggest guy, but he's a pro wrestler. And I'm not going to put him in the same position with Joey Ryan, but Joey Ryan, Matt Tremont, and Will Ospreay, I always put in my brain as kind of the leaders of their particular style, right? So Ospreay is like the best high fly guy. Joey Ryan is like the best like shock jock, crazy shit, you know, entertainer kind of guy. And Matt Tremont always gets thrown into the hardcore deathmatch scene. But I have personally witnessed all three have really good professional wrestling matches. Professional wrestling matches. Babyface heel, mat-based work, high, you know, a little off the top, selling an injury, whatever the case may be, whatever version of pro wrestling you're talking about. I've seen them do it. So for the three of them to do what they do outside of that bubble, it's all solely for the cash. It's to get paid. And there's nothing wrong with that. This fucking chair is going to be the fucking... I need to stop doing shows on this chair. Or just get a new chair, one or the other. It's a comfortable chair, though. By the way, I'm waiting for a couch. I'm doing this right now in the morning of Wednesday. I'm waiting for a couch to arrive. But I digress. Will Ospreay, Matt Tremont, Joey Ryan are great professional wrestlers. It just makes me upset that they make more money not being the wrestler than anything else. Because there is a niche audience. There is a buck to be made in these categories. Well, they have to stray a little bit. Will Ospreay can get into the ring with anybody, in my opinion, because I've seen him do it, big or small. It put on a convincing, believable, traditional pro wrestling match. I've seen Joey Ryan do it. I've seen Matt Tremont do it. But this style and evolution bullshit ends up leading the charge, and they end up separating themselves for this just so they can make the extra buck. And I'm not saying that negatively, get paid. I'm just saying what I should have the freedom to say that if a particular match that they had, I feel is not really that good, I should be able to say that. You know, I should have the freedom. I should be able to come out here and say, I don't think that match in particular was a very good pro wrestling match, and be fine. Oh, or CD, you don't know. You don't ever see that. I always say that. I hear that all the time. You know, because Will Ospreay, he does indies. He travels the UK. He goes all around. And that's usually when I see those kinds of matches, when he has straight up matches. But other than that, I'll see the flippy shit, right? Like the YouTube, because that's the thing. When they do YouTube clips of Will Ospreay, it's never of the wrestling stuff. It's always the flippy shit. Springboard RKO, that somersault, that standing somersault splash he does. He does a lot of cool shit. So if you're a casual and all you see is the YouTube clips, you just think this guy is just this crazy acrobat. And then people get upset. Oh, he's a wrestler. He can wrestle too. Right, but we're not seeing enough of that. From what I understand, because I haven't seen it yet, and I will, this matchup here with Will Ospreay and Shingo was a really, really good match. And there were a lot of people who were torn here, because Will is a very popular performer, but Shingo been here before. He's been close to this tournament final before. A lot of people were kind of thinking, all right, this is going to be his night. He's never won one before. And still nothing. So we're still waiting on Shinsuke to get over that hump just a little bit. And we'll see what happens there. The best of the Super Juniors, I have to say, as a tournament in and of itself, it's one of the most prestigious tournaments in the world, if not the most prestigious tournaments in the world. So for Will Ospreay to win it twice and be a finalist here three times, that's saying something to the credentials and the capabilities of a Will Ospreay. You know, so we'll leave that for you guys to discuss there in the comments and see what you think about that whole deal, the whole style and the evolution and blah, 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 blah. These guys can wrestle when they want to. They can wrestle when they want to. I just want them to want to wrestle more. That's it. That's it. Speaking of which, folks, wrestling when you want to and how you want to, I've been very strategic in not speaking on a topic before it develops. But now that it's been developing, let's talk about it. That god-awful Green Bay Packer Dollar Tree Championship belt, the 24/7 belt being held by R-Truth. So far, from what I understand, he is still the champion. And when it first debuted, I didn't really want to talk about it because, first of all, that belt looks like garbage. How many times, folks? How many times have I gone on my show and I have defended championship belts? I defended the Universal title. I've defended when they brought back the old Intercontinental Championship to the white strap. Everything. Everything. I have the Cruiserweight Championship. I don't think I had too much flack, but the women's tag titles I defended. The fact that the logos are all the same. I've defended all this stuff. I cannot defend at all. I cannot defend the 24/7 championship. That belt is garbage. It looks like trash. It appears on TV like trash. It looks like a toy belt with no creativity on it at all whatsoever. Even the color scheme. If you wanted to make the color scheme work, you'd think they'd come up with a better design to do so. This simplistic belt is just garbage. So off the back, it's already, you're already playing from behind the eight ball. And the whole gist of it is 24/7, so you think to yourself, oh boy, so there's going to be a lot of that cartoony shit, because folks, I've seen this episode before. We've all been there. If you're my age or close to it, you were there. The hardcore 24/7 rule. So I'm thinking to myself, my God in heaven, we're back to that. Because there was a reason they got rid of it, folks. It got stupid toward the end. Just outright dumb. To the point where former hardcore champions who didn't abide by those rules when they were competing for it just got disgusted with it and stayed away from the belt. Even Mick Foley, which makes me even sadder because he was one of the ones who hated the 24/7 rule and the bastardization of the championship. And then he's the guy out here holding up the Dollar Tree championship for everyone to just compete for. And it just made me sad inside. But it also made me think 24/7, right? There was a reason why they got rid of it. It was goofy. It was dumb. So how are they going to make it any better? So I wanted to wait and I wanted to see. Because again, starting from the eight ball, belt looks like shit. Mick comes off looking pretty hypocritical talking about the 24/7 rule. And for the record, it's the 24/7 rule without the hardcore, which to me doesn't make any sense. The very premise of this makes no sense. Because the reason why there were so many quick pinfalls, right? Which is what made it goofy. Every 2 seconds, there were some Raws where the belt would change hands 8-9 fucking times. I remember there was one WrestleMania. I forget which WrestleMania it was. Was it 18? Where the hardcore title was like defended like 12 times. But it got weird. But the reason why at least it was somewhat believable back in the day was the hardcore stipulation. Because at any minute, some guy could just break a jar over the back of your fucking head and pin you. Or you could be walking through the hallway and they'll just throw you into a plate glass window or hit you over the head with a fucking log or a chair or whatever the fuck is. Whatever's just lying around. You could pick up a small person and beat a larger person over the head with them. Whatever you wanted. But it made sense. If I took a fucking jar, an actual thick-ass Yankee Candle fucking jar, and smashed that shit over the back of your fucking head, and I pinned you right then and there, it makes sense. If you're in the middle of a fucking conversation, and I just roll up behind you and roll you up, I shouldn't be able to pin you. You're a professional wrestler. You block and you counter out of pins every day. It doesn't make any sense to me that somebody could just roll up behind you, roll you up at a schoolboy and pin you, and then out of sheer fear, run from you, accidentally walk into a wall or something, and then just get pinned. It's ridiculous. The 24/7 rule worked great with the hardcore stuff until it didn't work anymore, and it was just goofy. Now, in my opinion, it's even goofier because you're not hitting these people with anything. You're just scaring them into into being pinned. It's the dumbest. So I waited. Because all I would do, I'm sure, was doing exactly what I'm doing right now, which is just destroy it. I didn't see any good coming out of this. Until they started doing it. And then I realized very quickly that we may have something on our hands here. On an entertainment scale. Not necessarily, obviously, pro wrestling. But they haven't really bastardized the belt just yet. The first night, there was about 5 or 6 pins or whatever. But since then, they've actually been trying to make sense of each pin. We've only had the belt change hands once or twice. on a particular show, each time winding up with R-Truth, which is what they used to do with Crash Holly. That's why Crash Holly had like 36 title reigns, because he would start the show off with the belt. They do a bunch of different things where he'd drop it like three or four times, but he always leave with the championship. The Raw would always end with him grabbing his belt and running into his rental car and driving the fuck off. I'll never forget the frustration. There was an episode of Raw where Crash was just frustrated. I can't sleep. I can't breathe. I can't go anywhere without people trying to pin me and trying to beat me to become the hardcore champion. We have a very similar situation here with Truth. Truth is doing the same thing now with the whole it's ruining my life thing, trying to get Shane to remove the stipulation. And I love the fact that the 24/7 rule is being that in and of itself is the sole purpose of the storyline of the belt. You know, because before when it was doing the hardcore, that's the one negative to the hardcore 24/7 rule, is it just became redundant. You just kept beating each other over the head with all these different weapons, and that would be it, plain and simple, easy peasy. Now, as the 24/7 championship with no hardcore stipulation, you got to get a little bit more creative, and that's the one thing WWE does not really have right now, is a whole lot of creativity. So when you got guys coming out of trunks and golf courses, and R-Truth is on Instagram with the belt strapped in by a seatbelt in his car, it's causing people to think. And there were a few people who have been involved with this belt since its inception. Drake Maverick, formerly Rockstar Spud, with great comedic timing. They've had EC3, which is a whole other abomination all on its own. But if they were to let him go and let him be EC3, that actually could work. But one guy that popped up that I thought, man, here's the guy I really think when Truth is done getting over his shit, when it goes to the next guy. Did you hear that haunted door right now? That is my fucking chair. I'm about to get up and just fucking pace as opposed to just... This fucking chair is annoying. I'm done with this piece of shit. Anyway, you're sidetracking me, you fuck. The one guy that popped into my head when I started seeing the 24/7 stuff and he tried to get involved with it in the first night, Eric Young. Now, if you're not familiar with his work from TNA, I'm not going to say 24/7 rule, but he did a lot of great creative shit as EY when he was doing the Super EY stuff and he had the Legends Championship. If anything, the Legends Championship he was using as kind of like an anti 24/7. He wanted to defend it all the time, and nobody would take him up. It was just so weird. He is one of the most creatively gifted guys I've ever seen. And I was super hopeful for his time I was super happy with his time spent in Sanity because it gave him a chance to get away from the goofy shit. But if they're not going to seriously take him as a real competitor, then I think going back to the goofy shit actually might be the best idea for him for two reasons. Because if they're looking for entertainment, very few in the business more entertaining than EY. Secondly, he's got a track record. The fans will buy him as an entertainer, as a goofball, so to speak. And that championship would be perfect. Would be perfect. The return of EY, Super EY, would be even better. If we can get like a new version of that, that would be cool. And I know it's a step backwards. And normally, I wouldn't tell any performer to move backwards. That's not what I'm about, right? But you got to take the situation for what it is. And where you are on the totem pole here, and it ain't good. It's either this, what you're doing right now, or just go home and be released. There's a lot going on here, a lot of moving parts. So if you're looking for a niche spot, this would be it. There's actually a few guys in the WWE right now. They're looking for an opportunity to really just go balls out, this would be that opportunity. So I reserved the right. And I waited, and I said what I had to say, and now I look forward to seeing what they actually do with it beyond Truth. Because Truth right now, he's killing it. He's doing a great job with that belt. he's trying to get it over as an entertaining deal, the whole deal with the table and Cesaro. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right? 24/7, trying to get some comedy, trying to get some entertainment on the show, trying to be less predictable, less boring. Well, this is an opportunity to do that. And you've got talent that can do it. So let them do it. Absolutely let them do it. This week on WWE television has been huge for Jeddah. That's right. I said it. Jeddah. I don't understand what the fucking problem is. You take their money. You perform in their country. You're going to their fucking country in 2 days if you're not there already right now. Because that trip has to be a bitch. Say the fucking name. I get the loophole because it technically is in Jeddah. But this whole, I'm going to Jeddah to kick your ass. Stop. Stop. Because when you are promoting other pay-per-views in different places, you never once, they don't go, I'm going to beat you up in Edmonton. No, we're going to Canada, I'm going to kick your ass. This has always been the way that it is. And I know that's not a reason to stick to it if it's dumb, but I don't think it's that dumb. It happens all the time. They usually go with the country, and they always did it for this too. But now we're going to Jeddah. Just say fucking Saudi Arabia. What's the problem? I don't understand the point. Well, we don't want to piss anybody off. They're already pissed. You're going. You cashed the checks. You took the money. They're already going. So you might as well. What the fuck is the point? We're going to Jeddah. No, you're not. I mean, technically, yes, but that's not what we want to hear. Tell us the truth. You're going to Saudi Arabia. Just fucking say it. We're going to Saudi Arabia. I don't understand what the fuck is so hard about that. Why are you trying to stay away from it? We know you're going to Saudi Arabia. You made a big deal, actually, earlier today. Two women are going to the show with the crew. It's going to be Renee Young and Natalia. And if I'm Renee Young, to be honest with you, I don't think I want to go to Saudi Arabia. And maybe I'm stepping out of school here, and maybe I'm stepping out of line. But if I'm Renee Young, more importantly, if I'm Jon Moxley, there is no fucking way, none, that I want Renee Young in fucking Saudi Arabia right now. Because the level of petty with the WWE right now, I don't want any situation to happen to Renee Young while she's over in Saudi Arabia, while her husband is either in Japan or back in the States. Unless he's going to Saudi Arabia with her just for the trip, just to be on the road, I would not fucking go. I would, if I'm Renee Young, I stay far the fuck away from Saudi Arabia. Anything is bound to happen. And by the way, for the record, another big reason as to why I don't think any of the, to be honest with you, I don't think any of these women should be going to Saudi Arabia completely unescorted. I finally got a chance to read that Ashley Massaro affidavit. That is some disgusting shit that took place. Now, I like to play both sides. This is her rendition of the story, and she's no longer with us. So we're not able to really confirm or to get an eye-to-eye thing with her. But she's got zero reason to lie about any of this shit. Okay? Zero reason. She continued with the company immediately after that, which is what a lot of people will sit here and go back and forth about. Well, she had this crazy experience, and she explains it as this horrific experience coming back from Kuwait. But she stayed on the road, and she still did all this stuff, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Just because she managed to live with it does not mean that it's not a horrific situation. And if an investigation follows on this, which I doubt, because she's no longer with us. So at this point, it would be financially pointless at this point. But if they did follow any legal ramifications based on what Ashley had to write in a written, notarized affidavit, legal documentation, this is her side of the story, then I would want the entire, and this is coming from I Love Pro Wrestling, remember that? I Love Pro Wrestling. I would want the WWE completely and utterly destroyed for everything that she went through over there. Not just because it's not just the company. It's the booking agent. It's the assistants. It's the people that actually thought it was a good idea to leave her over there. Okay? It's the other performers that didn't bother to stick up for her. It's the other lady performers that just let her be. One person in particular who tried to sympathize, but in the end, truly didn't give a fuck because she didn't say anything either. A lot of moving parts on that story, and as that develops, because people are still, there's still information coming out about that. Even now, there's still information coming out about that. We're going to dig a little deeper into all that shit as well. We're going to dig a lot deeper into that. All right, but that's another story for another goddamn day. But it points to another problem, not another, but as a continuation to the first problem I started with here. Renee Young is in trouble. If she's alone, she's in trouble. I don't want her anywhere by herself in that country. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, oh, if that's how you feel, if it's just not that safe for her, why is the WWE over there in the first place? Money is why. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. Money is why. It's called business. They're out there to make money and be a business. So yes, I'm still in favor of them being out there. If I was the owner or the chairman of the WWE, I'd be out there too. But I'm not going to put myself in a position to have my staff either be attacked or assaulted or even uncomfortable, to be honest with you. Now, unless Natalia's whole purpose of being out there is just that, just for Renee to have another female out there, because she did go once by herself. There was no other females, just her. And maybe that experience soured her a little bit. And in an effort to keep up appearances, they decided to bring two instead of the one. And Natalia is basically just going to be a companion for Renee while she's on the road. Because she ain't performing. She's not performing in front of the Saudi prince, that's for sure. So if that's the idea, well, they're going to give her a roommate and they're going to be able to, you know, be a companion. She won't be alone. They'll have a security team take her from room to room or even from room to venue or whatever the case may be. That's fine. But in no way, shape, or form should any of these women ever again be put in a position where they have to be dealt with individually and alone in solitude. Ever. And hopefully, this all adds up to that. And they'll be taking a little bit more caution with the women. Okay, that's the WWE situation. Fans, let me ask you a question. What the fuck do you even care at this point? And not about pro wrestling as a whole, something in particular. All right, because one other thing that I haven't mentioned, because I've been waiting to see how this plays out, is the wild card rule. I haven't mentioned the wild card rule this entire time because I've, again, waiting to see how this plays out. And it's been 2-3 weeks, and maybe that's not a large enough sample size, but I same deal with the 24/7 rule. So let's talk about it. And the one thing to talk about is it's garbage. It's a piece of shit. There's nothing genius about the wild card rule. Nothing at all. Doesn't freshen anything up, doesn't shake anything up. If anything, it made it worse. Because one of the bonuses of the Superstar Shakeup that I liked, as an example, is the fact that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens were apart. They're tag teaming again. No explanation, no nothing. It's almost like two gimmicks that just happened to be teaming together for a common goal. Bullshit. It's Kevin and Sami. It took that away. Alexa Bliss got off of SmackDown to Raw so she could do something different, and now she's on both. Now she's on both. Charlotte's on both shows. It's just a blend. So everyone keeps saying the same thing. What is the point of the brand split? The answer to that is nothing. There is no point to the brand split anymore. But here's where I have the question. What do you even care for? Because the brand split has been dead for a while. Long before the days of the wild card rule, the brand split has been garbage for a minute now. The Superstar Shakeup was supposed to fix that. That was why they did the shakeup. To give you the impression, we're going to move some people around, we're going to shake it up, and we're going to give you guys different matchups, fresh outlooks, new champions, all kinds of cool shit. Right? The Superstar Shakeup actually ended up doing the exact fucking opposite. It ruined everything. Ruined everything. So they had to fix it with the wild card rule. Because they thought it was a good idea to just let Roman go to SmackDown and Finn Balor go to SmackDown and Joe to Raw and all these different maneuvers and Ray to Raw. And it was just going to be fine. We're going to shake shit up. And they are all on the same fucking shows any fucking way. So, to your point, yes, the brand split is garbage. There's no point in it anymore. But it's been garbage. So what is the point? What do you care anymore? Why do you people continuously every week? I saw a meme earlier of Alexa Bliss getting her hand raised. And this is the night that the brand split died. June 3rd or 4th or whatever the fuck. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's been dead for over a year. The brand split has been dead for a while. Rigor mortis has set in, folks. That body is cold to the touch. It's been dead. They're trying to salvage it. And there is no salvaging it. It's fucking dead. There's nothing about it that's good. There's nothing about it that is keeping anyone interested at all whatsoever. And it goes more to the conversation we were having before about creativity. The WWE has a formula, an algorithm that they go by. And be damned if they stray from it. Prime example, the build-up for the most recent WWE Universal Championship. Remember when losing the championship, when Lesnar loses the championship, finally we had an opportunity to reclaim some sort of glory here, to get it back on the show every week, to get it off of the quote-unquote part-timer and put it on a guy like Rollins, who's a workhorse, and he's going to put on these great matches for the Universal Championship. Well, here's what ended up happening, folks. We have a Universal Championship matchup between Rollins and Corbin, and the entire build-up is Rollins and Lesnar. That's the whole build-up. They ran a package on SmackDown last night. All Corbin had in that entire video was one end of days. That's it. Now, is it going to the point we were saying a while ago that Lesnar's that big of a draw and Corbin's that much of a heel that it's not needed? I have my doubts. I just think they're lacking creative. That's it. They're lacking creative. There's no other way around it. That's why the wild card rule was instituted. It was supposed to be some form of genius. Isn't that what he said? I'm a genius. Yeah. It's such good shit, right, Vince? Such good shit. This is awesome stuff. I'll be able to take 3 or 4 superstars per brand and move them around. And shake shit up. You're not shaking shit up. You're blurring the lines. You're blurring the lines. A split brand, and I've said this on the show before, a split brand has a lot of possibilities to it that they haven't even scratched the surface of. Not only or just including the opportunity for an actual off-season. I have pitched this a few times. That's the beauty of the split brands. You can take certain guys off the road for long periods of time, or at least longer. Rest periods of a month, maybe 2. Maybe even 3, depending on the injuries, depending on what you got going on. You can keep guys off the road. You pay them, but you keep them off the road so they can lick their wounds a little bit. And they'll spend less time on the injured list. They're not getting banged up every fucking night. There's a lot of possibilities. I'm not going to get into it now. It's a little late in the show to be doing that now. But I've posted that shit quite a few times. And I wish people would pay more fucking attention to it. But they're not, because the WWE won't let you pay attention to it. They just keep wiping their ass with the concept over and over and over and over again. And beating you over the head with this idea that they're fucking geniuses. And as long as you just follow along, they'll be fine. And you'll be fine. But you won't be fine, will you? No, you won't, because the wild card rule is garbage. One last point that I want to bring up, and then we're all done here. TakeOver 25. This was a TakeOver show. This is NXT. I'm all over the place today, baby. I'm talking New Japan Pro. I'm talking WWE. I'm talking NXT. We're all over the place today, baby. But TakeOver 25 took place. Its first standalone pay-per-view, all on its own, taking place in Bridgeport, Connecticut, a building that I have been in. Not the biggest building in the world, but definitely a nice, strong building for our audience to be in. The crowd was hot all night. And, of course, the conversation was, and I don't know why it was, but it was, which show's better, Double or Nothing or TakeOver 25? And I have to cast my vote, okay? I have to cast my vote. And my vote goes to TakeOver 25. For multiple reasons. A, not as long. And that's huge with me. 3 hours and 48 minutes. I mean, come on, guys. And you only had, what, 6 or 7 matches? 5 matches in 2 hours with NXT TakeOver. Okay? 5 matches. Actually, was it 2 hours or was it 3 now that I'm thinking about it? Even still, they kept it to a minimum here. All right? The Street Profits walking away with the Tag Team Championship. I get it. You know, it's a big move for them. They're a great tag team. Montez Ford is a fucking freak. He is a freak. That guy is just, that frog splash, very RVD-like with that handstand at the end. That was an amazing match, the ladder match. I'm not a huge stickler on spreading stables out unless it's a big show and you're just trying to get the most out. But the booking of this pay-per-view was absolute brilliance. They opened, they spread the Undisputed Era out. They opened up with Roderick. They put the Red Dragon right there in the fucking middle. And then, of course, Adam Cole at the end. And all of them fucking delivered. All of them fucking delivered. I didn't see a shitty match on that card. Io and Shayna delivered. I loved everything about this entire fucking show. Hyped. Even Johnny Falsey pulled on a display. A little less Falsey on this one. The problem with these main events, though, is a lot of the problems I used to have with Ring of Honor matches where they would do so many false finishes, they would do so many power moves, they would do so many eclectic things that you start to burn your audience out. Every 2 seconds, you get to a situation where they think this is it, and then nope, and then this is it, and then nope, and then this is it, and then nope, and it's a finisher here, kick out, finisher here, kick out, finisher here, kick out, finisher, finisher, kick out, finisher, finisher, kick out, finisher, finisher, Falsy, finisher, it just goes on and on, and it gets to the point where I think Adam Cole literally just threw the entire kitchen sink at him. And we've come to learn, of all the TakeOver matches Johnny Gargano has had, we have come to learn that while he is seemingly unbeatable, he is also a guy who could never seem to win. It's such a weird thing. It takes so much to beat Johnny Gargano on a TakeOver. Tommaso Ciampa tries. Ricochet tried. Adam Cole tried. All these guys, they throw bombs at Johnny Gargano. They do everything in their power to try to get this guy dead. And Johnny just won't die. But he does usually tend to stay down long enough for a 3 count. Because all those guys that I just mentioned to you, at some point, all beat him. So he's an amazing character to follow. Because it just seems like he's impossible to beat. And yet everyone at some point seems to beat him. So if you follow NXT, there's a feeling right now. I don't think Triple H feels, and I'm not speaking for Triple H, I just get this vibe like he feels his best shot against the competition is the crew that he's going with, which is going to make call-ups, in my opinion, very difficult for NXT moving forward. AEW makes NXT call-ups very, very difficult because the more you move these guys up to the main roster, the less ammunition NXT has. And the guys that you're sending to the main roster aren't being utilized the way they were in NXT, thus being ineffective. They're just on your bench, on your roster. They're just guys at this point, and gals. Look at Nikki Cross. What the fuck are they doing with Nikki Cross? It's such a mishmash of different things going on. Anywho, this TakeOver in particular proves at least one thing here. They don't need the big pay-per-view. They don't need to go before WrestleMania. They don't need to go before the Royal Rumble. They don't need to go before SummerSlam. These guys can do their own takeovers at their own time, at their own pace, and still do well. The gate, I'm sure, will be just as big as it was for any of those takeover weekends from before. And moving forward, we will see if we end up getting any more of these pay-per-views. And I will end this by saying this, for those of you still asking me, oh, AJ, you have to be convinced that NXT is a brand now. It's not. It's still developmental, folks. Still developmental. And still, until we go back and forth with talent and it's considered same level with everything else, it will always be developmental. So, thank you guys for paying attention to yet another episode here of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. But before I go, before I leave all of you, I just wanted to drop a huge thank you to the folks over at 2bscene.com. I have to drop a big-ass thank you to them for helping me out. Over the weekend, we did a lot of recording. I did a lot of video work and promo work for a lot of different reasons and a lot of different places. And I just got to say a huge thank you to Founder Voice, who is the owner and proprietor of 2bscene.com. You guys got a chance to hear him on the WrestleMania Roundtable, the live episode. He was a part of that. And I want to thank him tremendously for being a part of that and for helping me out this weekend. I can't speak better about them. They're really good. What is 2bscene, you're wondering? Well, here's a little bit of information about 2bscene I'm going to leave you with, as well as my ending here. So I will leave you with this information so that you guys can jump on board and be a part of the 2bscene family as well. So thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing. And, of course, thank you for enjoying. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. Hey guys, Orsini here, and I just want to take the time to thank our sponsor for the live WrestleMania Roundtable, 2bscene.com. That is the number 2bscene.com. They are an entertainment and videography company, and I have given them big two thumbs up. I have used them in the past for my own pro wrestling company, and I'm glad to be working with them yet again with the podcast. Now, again, they're an entertainment and videography company. They do it all, baby. They storyboard, they film you, they edit, they publish all in one place. It's easy come, easy go. They even have the ability to shoot the baby in 4K. If you're a YouTuber or an internet sensation coming up, these are the people that you want to contact and work with. What's that? You're not a YouTuber? You're not trying to be all over the place? That's fine. You can still go to their website for entertainment purposes. They hold live trailer chats. They discuss movies and anything entertainment. Check it out again. The number 2bscene.com.
Welcome to our daddy show. This is Ocean Senses Mine. If you listen to my daddy show, he should buy me toys. He's a good daddy.